Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Now available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, PodcastOne.com, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome. You're tuned into the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, along with me, Tim Dennis. Hello, Tim.
Hey.
How you doing today, sir?
Doing good. How are you?
I'm doing good. Don Wildman is joining us next week, Tim.
Yeah.
Mysteries in the Museum. I've loved that show for a long time. He has a brand new program, and he's going to be joining us next week to discuss this new program, Buried Worlds. We're going to hear about some really fascinating stories, including his search for the truth behind vampires and witches and so many other great cases. We're going to talk with Don Wildman next week here on the Best in Paranormal Talk Radio. Another quick update, Tim. I am hitting the road tomorrow. We begin filming the second part of season two. They have decided to drag us back out into the real world, pull us out from the comfort of our homes, and put us back out there to filming. And we've got eight more episodes to record. So I will be out in the film, out in the field filming again for the Holzer Files and delivering some more fun stories. So just giving people an update. We'll continue bringing you great Darkness Radio and True Crime Tuesday episodes. Fear not, faithful listeners. We will not let you down. We didn't during the coronavirus. We will stay with you until they pry these microphones from our cold, dead hands, Tim.
Oh, yeah, most definitely.
And then at that point, there's no telling. We may just come broadcasting ourselves through your radio in kind of an afterlife chronicle as well. So you never know.
You never know
what you're going to get with the two of us.
It'll still be very creepy, even after we're dead. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But what's not creepy is our next guest, Tim. Today, joining us, Annie Mattingly is here. The book we're going to discuss, The After Death Chronicles, True Stories of Comfort, Guidance, and Wisdom from Beyond the Veil. Plus, she's written more. We're going to talk with her about some of these great stories. Annie, thank you so much for coming on and sharing some time with us today.
Well, I've been looking forward to it.
Yeah, but 3 years waiting. Isn't that about right?
Something like that. It's been quite a while.
Annie and I had set up, we're getting, trying to find a time for an interview, and it was just one of those things where the email got lost in time in my deal. And I finally found emails that were put into this weird side folder in our email system. I found her responses. We finally connected. We were talking back in 2017 when this book was released. And here we are just 3 years later. It's well worth the wait is my thought. You know, let's wait, save the best for last, but we've got you on now. The After Death Chronicles, Stories of Comfort, Guidance, and Wisdom from Beyond the Veil. Annie, what brought you to researching and writing a book like this?
Well, I suppose it was, in a way, a long path. I had a little bit of experience after my parents died, 30 years ago it is now, more than that, and had sort of opened me to the idea that there was a possibility of some kind of contact with someone you love after they died, and then that was brought up in a very large and painful way in 2010, following the death of my daughter. I was not at that time thinking at all about after-death communication, even though the seed had been planted before. But then a week or two or three weeks, I think it was, after she died, one morning she awakened me with sensations in my body, and it was so overwhelmingly comforting to be aware that I could have that kind of contact, and also relieving because I knew that she, simply by her presence, I knew that she was all right. And that.
Now, 1 second. You said that you became aware of her because of sensations in your body or on your body?
In my body. I guess I'll be more specific about Please. How this occurred. I was dead asleep. There's that. I shouldn't use that word dead, but anyway, I was sound asleep, you know. I was sound asleep. It was very early in the morning, just barely light. And at that point, I really hated waking up in the morning because it was like waking up into the nightmare of remembering that my daughter was dead. And I felt this kind of a like goosebumps. It was just like goosebumps coming up the whole left side of my body from my feet up to the top of my head. And I'm like, what the heck is this? And I turn over and try to go back to sleep, and it happened again. And then it happened a third time, but it just flooded my whole body from the bottom of my feet. Shoosh! This energy, like a river, came all the way up out the top of my head. And I sat up, and this is a moment that I've later heard from many other people, where somehow we know something that we did. We don't know how we know this, because her name was Randy. Her nickname was Randy. And I sat up, and I said, Randy, is this you? If it's you, do something so I know. And I looked around the room. I'm looking, you know, I want something to move, you know, I want something dramatic, and nothing happens. And there's a little pause, and she says, your body knows. And that's all she said that first time. But my body did know. I knew in my body that this was her.
Did this voice, would you say it spoke in your head, or did you hear it out loud?
In that is the only time in all of our hundreds of contacts that it was out loud. It was her voice. It was as though she were in the room. It was unmistakable. You can't not recognize your daughter's voice, you know. And I knew beyond a shadow of a doubt that it was her voice. And I knew also that this was her waking me up.
Now, you said that you'd had experiences or something when your parents had passed away as well. Is that something you feel going to be a little bit more open with, son?
Yeah, certainly. I have nothing to hold back here. It was a different kind of an experience because it occurred in my dreams. I need, in order for it to make sense, I have to tell you a little bit about my parents. My father had polio when he was 2 years old and always walked with canes. And my mother, before she met my father, was an extremely good ballroom dancer. But of course, they never danced together because of his disability. And they died very close together, 16 days apart. So it was pretty difficult. And also within, they died the end of November and early December, and this was in sometime early January, so about a month or so later. I had a dream in which I was standing on the edge of a very large ballroom, beautiful parquet floor, chandeliers, and I could hear Strauss waltz being played on the other side of the room by an orchestra. I couldn't see the orchestra. And there was a couple circling the dance floor way on the other side. And when they came close, I could see the woman's skirt was swirling wide. It was really beautiful. And when they got really close, I saw that it was my parents dancing together. And I called out. I said, Mother, Daddy, you know, I'm calling out to them. Nothing. So I go and I move onto the dance floor and try to block them. They just dance around me and go on. And when I awakened from this dream, and this is another revealing part, I think, about how dreams can, a dream with the dead that is an after-death communication is different from just simply dreaming about their parents. So my first feeling was how beautiful it was that my parents were able to dance together. And the second one was a sense of maybe right order about the fact that they had died so close together. I had been bordering on angry before that. It's like, my mother died of cancer, and how come my father had to die 16 days later? You know, couldn't he have hung on for us? It wasn't, I know he wanted to be with her, but what about us, me and my sister, and his grandchildren? But I had, in sense, this sense that it was the right thing, that he had his, there is something called post-polio syndrome that begins in the latter part of life for someone who's had polio as a child. And this was beginning to affect him pretty dramatically. And I think even though he was still, appeared to be healthy, it was time. It was simply time. And I accepted that because of the dream in a way that I had not accepted it in that first month when I was upset and angry. And it didn't make me not grieve to have this dream, but it nevertheless calmed something in me. And that is a fairly common result from a dream with someone, an after-death communication dream, to have some aspect of what you're feeling be relieved and satisfied and relaxed by having that connection.
To see something like that, that is so extraordinary. And to have this kind of communication with them, did they seem to know you were there, or were you almost like a hologram in their world watching?
That's more what it felt like. And I think that if this had been another kind of dream, I would have been upset because they didn't pay attention to me, but I wasn't. It just seemed normal. They were in their world and I was in my world, and we could have this contact, but it was not to be an exchange. So whether they even knew I was there or not, I don't know, but they certainly didn't pay any attention.
Well, with that said, here's kind of a nice closure moment. You get to see the two of them happy, healthy, together, right, doing something that they would love to do.
Mm-hmm.
But yet there isn't this finalization of them acknowledging you. How does that leave you at the end of an experience like that? Did you feel satisfied? Was it good enough just to know they were happy and together?
It was in that case. It was. Okay. Yeah, it felt completely right, and allowed me to move into the next stages of my grief, really, in a healthier way.
And now, do you consider this a dream visitation?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Had you ever had any experiences with them after death that felt like it was in the waking moment, like there was something they were letting you know that they were still around you, that things were okay?
Well, I have never had any kind of experience other than that with my father, which I found disappointing. And I had not had any other experiences with my mother other than that dream until after my daughter's death. And then when my daughter began visiting me on a regular basis, sometime into that, it might have even been after I wrote the book. So it was a few years after my daughter's death, my mother began to show up with my daughter at the same time. And the way that I receive on an intuitive basis is either, it's occasionally through my dreams, but it's more frequently through my body, like those sensations that I described, and audibly, I hear. I don't see. I don't have any visions. That just doesn't happen for me. But so my daughter, Randy, I feel through the left side of my body, and my mother, I feel through the right side of my body. So if I feel on both sides, I know they're both there. And my mother has come in a few dreams fairly recently, within the last few years. But it is more common for her to come on this right side of my body. And when they both come now, because it's now been 10 years since Randy's death, or coming up on 10 years, when they both come, it's usually because something is going on in my life where I need help. And I don't have to ask for it. They simply show up, usually very early in the morning. That's my kind of most clear place spiritually. And it is when I do my spiritual practice, my mantras. And at that time, I will feel this sensation and then sometimes receive guidance or support of some kind. Sometimes it's might be health related. I've got something going on, and I'm going, what should I do about this? And I'll get guidance from them.
You have these very profound experiences for yourself. You see things happen and sense this. And this is what brings you to want to explore this deeper and talk to more people?
Well, what happened was, after Randy died and I was having these experiences on a fairly regular basis with her. And at first I just kept my mouth shut until first I told my husband, but I wasn't talking about them in general. And then I decided kind of cautiously to tell someone. And I told the first person, and right away she told me an experience that she had had. And I found that pretty interesting because I'd known her for a while, and why wouldn't she have told me this before? And then I told someone else, and it just kept, every time I told someone, they either had a personal experience of their own, or they knew someone very close. Like, I remember someone telling me that after her father's death, her mother had had an experience with her father. So I was receiving these, you know, like day by day, and I got fascinated. I said, why aren't we talking about this? Why do people act like this is kind of a wild and unusual experience, if indeed it is happening to many people? So I opened up to others. I told people that I was interested in hearing more stories, and then I ended up putting flyers and, you know, advertising in a small way. I didn't have to advertise in a large way because I got so many people were... I would get emails from people that I'd never heard of saying, oh, well, I've had this experience, and would you like to hear from my sister because she had this experience?
And does that surprise you how open and willing people were to share this?
It did at first, but then I realized that as soon as people knew that I had had an experience, they were no longer afraid to share. A lot of people told me experiences they had never told anyone else. Or they had told.
Right, but it's one thing to share it with you, but knowing you're about to share this with the world, it becomes something, you know, even more personal.
Well, they did seem to feel sort of honored by that, about the fact that there was a chance to share the experience in a way that, I mean, a few requested anonymity, and I did change names in most cases, not always. Depending on what people wanted. But I think they felt good involved in a project that was showing that this was normal and right. And they felt that it was helpful to other people because they knew how helpful these experiences were to them. So if they shared them, they were helping others who were grieving.
We all go through grief, and not everyone has these type of experiences, though. What do you say to people that are dealing with this, but not having that kind of connection that you've had?
Well, I say quite a few things, really. I mean, the first is that there's more mystery in this than, you know, we can't figure this out. We can't sort this out and say, well, if you do this, that's going to happen. If you behave properly spiritually, I've heard people say this, you know, if you just open up, you will have this contact. And yet I've talked to psychics who say that there are a few times that they have tried to reach someone who was dead, and just they're blocked. They will not come, and they don't know why. And so we have to be open to the mysterious part of this, I think. But then the second part is that we can help to make this, to access this. It doesn't come with guarantees, but yet, if we first of all try to influence that skeptical part of ourselves and allow the possibility that this can happen, that's a start. That's for setting the stage.
So do you think that more people are having after-death communication, but they're just not recognizing it as such?
I think sometimes that is the case. Sometimes people just deny it. They say, oh, well, I'll be talking to someone and they'll say, oh, I've never had anything like that happen. And then I'll continue talking. And then they'll go, well, you know, there was this one time, but it was probably nothing. And then they tell me something that I've heard repeatedly. And so they are blocking it with their minds, with the mental part of themselves. And if they create a situation, you know, setting up a little altar, putting a picture on a shelf with a candle, setting aside a time to try to you can wait for contact from the other side, but you can also initiate it on your side by simply talking to the person or writing to the person or drawing something for the person. And this can make a pathway for the possibility to occur.
People from all walks of life have these experiences, and
absolutely,
it seems to cross religious barriers. People that are believers or non-believers have had these experiences. It's really kind of exciting and wondrous to hear these kind of tales. Since your book came out, do you continue to get more and more messages? Are we going to see a follow-up book as well?
I don't know. It's not in the cards right now, but I didn't know this book was going to be in the cards either, so who knows? If I felt called to write this book, and if I feel called to write another, I will. People do tell me stories still. I get contacts through people I know, and also through my website. People will simply write and say, I want to tell you about, you know, and they will tell me about the experiences that have happened to them. So, I'm not putting a lot of focus on it right now, but I interviewed two people within the last, I don't know, with COVID, it's confusing, within the last couple of months, you know.
Oh, man, what a week. Am I right? What a week. If you weren't feeling pain or anxiety or just having trouble sleeping this week, I don't think you're human, right? I'll tell you. I've had one whiz-bang of a week. I bet you have too. And I got to thank Feels for getting me through this week. This week, and you could probably still hear, I still have a little bit of a problem with my voice, with my jaw, on top of all my other stuff, which you've obviously heard over and over again. I had one heck of a run-in with the dentist a couple weeks ago, and I'm still dealing with tooth issues. So I'll try to make this as understandable as I can. If you experience some stress this week, if you have anxiety, especially with the world events going on, or even events in your backyard, you, I'm sure, have had some anxiety. If you've got chronic pain, if you've had some trouble sleeping at least once this week, you are not alone. I'll give you a new anxiety I've had this week, too. It's not great. Many of us have all this stuff personally. You can reach out and get some help. I did. I went and got Feels. What's Feels? Feels is premium CBD delivered directly to your doorstep. And it is a godsend, I'm telling you. What does Feels do? Well, it naturally helps reduce stress, anxiety, pain, and sleeplessness. And I got to tell you, my mom asked me over Memorial Day weekend. She said, you know what, honey, I'm having problems with pain. And she has. She's had some really, really tough issues with pain. And now a lot of you have said, is this stuff real? Are you putting me on here, Tim? And I've responded to each and every one of you. And I've said, it's absolutely real. I take it myself. Now, would I give it to my dear mother, who I love more than anything on this earth, if it wasn't real? And yes, I did. I gave it to my mom because she was in so much pain. She's having some real bad issues with sciatica, real bad issues with her hip, real bad issues with back pain as well. And I said, when I saw her on Memorial Day, first time I've been out of the house in months, except for doctor appointments and dentist. Yeah, anxiety. I went and saw her, of course, social distancing, wearing my mask and all that. And I said, Mom, here you go. Here's that Feels you wanted. Showed her how to use it. And of course, if you're wondering how you use it, well, of course, you place a few drops of Feels under your tongue. You feel that difference within minutes, right? Remember, we talked about this. And with CBD, you got to find your right dose. So I said to Mom, I said, well, what we're going to do here is we're going to go to that first line. There's three lines on the dropper. We'll go to the first line and we'll see how you feel. And so she took it before she left for home. Home was only about 7-8 minutes away. I said, I want you to text. Let me know how you feel. And so she got home. She texted me. I said, do you feel better? She said, I do. I do. The pain is subsided. I said, good. I said, you know, keep up with me. Let me know how you're feeling. And I'm pleased to report to you that mom's feeling better. Feels is working for her as well. And again, with this dose, leave room to experiment over the course of a week or so, because, you know, and mom's listening right now too. You leave room to experiment because maybe you're going to need more. Mom's got the same metabolism as I do. So she's probably going to need more than just that first line of the dropper after a while. She may have to up her ante. I know she was just taking it once a day, but you may need to take it twice a day, just depending. And you may need to take more or less to get the effects that you're after there. If you're having issues and you're new to CBD, Feels offers a free CBD hotline to help guide your experience. Oh, I was going to tell you. I'll tell you this too. Anxiety. I have a new anxiety. I remember I told you about the dentist. That was anxiety. You ready for this one? So I have a small wound on my foot. I've told you guys about it. And this one popped up in January, and I've had a hard time getting it completely healed. It's just teeny tiny on the bottom of my Charcot foot. And I've been in a pressure cast for about, it's going on a couple of months. Well, no, not quite a couple of months. It's been about 4 weeks now that I've been in a pressure cast. Well, depending on how tight it is when they first put it on, it's really, really tight. And even though I have neuropathy, I can't feel the pressure cast. But imagine just getting an anaconda grip on that lower foot ankle, and you can't feel it, right? You can't feel that grip on your foot, but I can. I can feel the pressure. Well, I've got claustrophobia, right? So that vice grip is around my ankle the entire time, and I can feel it. Now, when I start to get anxious is when I go to sleep. Okay, now I take my Feels before I go to sleep. I've needed to up my Feels because I got that anaconda grip around my ankle. Now I'm starting to get anxious as I start to lay down. I'm starting to take another few drops of Feels. So thank you, Feels, because you're helping me get over my anxiety. It feels like I've got a bear trap around my ankle. So Feels is helping me through that too. You guys think I'm crazy, maybe. I don't know, but it's helped me sleep because of that anxiety. I can't get to sleep. I start rocking back and forth, and I get the creepy crawlies. And when I start to feel like that, I take about a half a dropper full of Feels. It helps me calm back down again. Otherwise, I'm just a mess, and I can't get to sleep, and I have to sit back up and lay back down and sit back up and lay back down. I've been going through that for about a week and a half now with the anxiety. And I just thinking about it, I got to get myself out of the mindset. Let's talk about Feels. Let's do that. But I want to thank Feels for that because they've been helping me through that anxiety. So about a half dropper full gets me through that cast anxiety now that I get from that. I want you to feel better naturally. You can feel better naturally with Feels. It works naturally to help you feel better. There's no hide, there's no hangover, there's no addiction. Don't get me wrong, when I get that cast anxiety, when I get pain in my joints, when I get pain in my neck and my back and my knees, when I need to get through that, when I need to get through the anxiety, when I need to get through these different issues I have, I'm not getting high off the CBD. I'm not getting the hangover, the addiction. That's not what Feels is doing. Feels is just getting rid of that pain naturally. It's this nice, easy, like the pain's melting away. It's like taking ibuprofen. It's just really nice to have Feels there in my corner. So you're saying to yourself, Tim, how do I do it? How do I get involved? It's real easy. You can join the Feels community to get Feels delivered to your door every month. It's just boom. It's right there. It's so nice. You'll save money on every order, and you can pause or cancel at any time. And I keep telling you every single week, I don't know why you'd want to. Why would you want to cancel at any time? I'm telling you, once you start up with Feels, you're going to want to continue with Feels because it does really feel good when you start moving around and feeling good and you've got that weight lifted off you from the anxiety. You're going to feel amazing. Feels has me feeling my best every day. It can help you too. And I want to help you right now with that feeling of anxiety, that feeling of pain, that sleeplessness. Become a member today by going to feels.com/darkness. And I tell you what, we're going to give you 50% off your first order with free shipping. That's feals.com/darkness to become a member and get 50% automatically taken off your first order with free shipping. It's real easy. feals.com/darkness. Go ahead, do it today.
The After Death Chronicles, True Stories of Comfort, Guidance, and Wisdom from Beyond the Veil. That's the name of the book. We have a link for that book on today's program. As a matter of fact, if you go to darknessradio.com, click on the shop tab, or if you use our handy dandy app. What? You didn't know we have an app? We do. We have a Darkness Radio app. You can go to the Google Play Store or iTunes Store, get the free Darkness Radio app, download it. You can take the show along with you, listen anytime from there. You'll see all the other cool little buttons we have. But you can visit our Amazon shop, and every purchase you make, a small portion goes to Darkness Radio. So it doesn't take away from the authors or the creators. It is just a little way of us helping to spread all of this great information, all these great products. And we have in our shop everything from books that you hear featured on the show to clothing lines, toys, games, and more fun things to keep you busy during this lockdown situation. So make sure you go check it out. There's a link for it at our shop site at Darkness Radio, or you can find it in our Darkness Radio app, or just follow the link in on today's book that you see on our posting, and you can go in, order the book, and find other items there as well. All right, Annie, let's start digging into some of your favorite stories that you collected, some of the ones that really stood out to you as just some of the most unusual, unique, and beautiful stories.
Okay. Well, certainly, first of all, I love them all, no matter how simple they are. The fact that something as dramatic, feeds our desire for drama. But as far as the person having the experience, the most simple thing where someone simply hears the phrase, "I am okay," and receives that fully is as dramatic for that individual as any other story. But I will tell a story about a woman whose brother had died by suicide, which, by the way, is how my daughter died. So a certain portion of the people that I interviewed had that experience of losing someone through the death by their own hands. But this woman was very distraught after her brother's death. She was crying. She had headaches all the time. She was just really having a very, very tough time. And she went for a walk in a park near where we both used to live there in the Bay Area of California, up in the Oakland Hills. And in this park, way deep when you walk into this woods, somebody had created a labyrinth. And she's walking, and she's crying, and she's worrying, and just she can't figure out why her brother has done this thing. And she sees the labyrinth and goes into the labyrinth and sits down cross-legged and closes her eyes. And while she's sitting there with her eyes closed, she can feel her brother's presence. Now, at that point, it's simply a sensation. She feels aware that he is there. And in fact, it seems like he's there all around her. And she opens her eyes, and he is there all around her. There's a circle of her brothers, one after another. I don't remember now how many. There were like 10 or something like this. And one is to her left and puts his right arm around her. And one is to her right and puts his left arm around her. And they just sit there and tell her that he says that he is all right, that he is okay, that everything is fine. And because of how powerfully, and she does do visual art, so this may be why she sees these had this experience in a visual way because of the power of seeing all of these brothers, these copies of her brother, and hearing his voice on both sides of her and in front of her. She is able to really accept that he is okay. And just as most of these experiences have a tendency to take us into another layer of our grief and relax us from that for initial most troubling part, she is greatly relieved.
I know, you know, through the genesis of our program over the last 14 years, we've talked to a lot of people that have these moments of kind of clarity and communication with the spirit realm. Do many of the people that have these ever leave with more confusion? You know, I mean, we hear about all the great stories, but do people ever relate to you, you know, the spirit seems puzzled or maybe even angry or doesn't realize it's dead? Is there any aspect of that that maybe isn't as popular as the other stories we hear?
Well, I heard a couple of stories like that. And sometimes what happened was the living person was frightened. And I this is a place where I want to give some advice, and I'll share an experience of my own that will illustrate that. I'd say about 2 months after Randy died, I was sitting watching a movie at home, you know, a DVD with my husband, and I was enjoying it completely. Until I started to feel really sick. I was sick to my stomach, and I felt awful, like I was coming down with the flu or something of that nature. And I kind of lost touch with what was happening to the movie. I sat there it was close to the end. I sat there for the rest of it and then immediately got in bed. It was nighttime. And as soon as I laid down, I knew that Randy was with me, and it did not feel good. She was agitated, and it was making my whole body feel really bad. And I went, this is not all right. And I asked her, I said, Randy, what's going on? And she was talking about something which sounded like, she didn't use this phrase, but it sounded very much like the concept of the life review, where she was being shown things about her life. And she was asking me for help. And I said, She said, look, there are beings where you are who can help you a lot better than I can. This is not my field of expertise. And I'm laughing now. I probably didn't say it exactly like that. I said, you go and ask them. And as soon as I did that, all these sensations in my body left. I felt fine. I wasn't sick. And she was gone. And I went almost immediately to sleep. And when I awakened in the morning, in the usual way, she came and she was calm. And it wasn't like this. And what we ended up doing was she told me that what she had been upset about had to do with recognizing that there were some aspects of her parenting that had been flawed. And so I talked to her about some of the aspects of my parenting that had been flawed, some of the mistakes that I had made. And the two of us, I've jumped ahead here, because I said, now that you're calm, is there anything I can do for you? And she said, you could hold me. And it's very difficult to explain this, but we lay in the bed with our arms around each other, and it felt as though she were truly physically in my arms. And then we talked about these flaws in our parenting, and it was as though instead of being a mother and a daughter, we were on a much more equal level.
How beautiful and cathartic for both of you would that be?
Oh, extremely so. You've nailed it by using the word cathartic. There was that. It was just a lovely, lovely experience. But it taught me something too, that I've been able to share with other people about the fact that if someone is afraid of the contact, or if there is something frightening that happens from the dead person, and I've only heard a couple of minor things about that, send them away. Say, you don't belong here. You are in the realm of the dead, and you need to be there and ask for your help there. I cannot help you, and you can't harm me, because they don't. We have the most power in this realm. We are in the physical realm. They are visiting the physical realm. They don't have the physical anymore. And any harm they can do to us, I believe, is because we've allowed it to happen. We can stop it. We can send them back. And as I saw in my experience, and then they get the help that they need, and then if they visit, it returns to a beautiful place instead of this frightening one.
That's great advice. What advice do you have before we take our break? What advice do you have to people that want to have these experiences? How do you open up to this to have a good, fruitful, open experience with a loved one that's crossed, or to call in, I guess, the right loved one?
Mm-hmm. Well, I advise creating a time and a space and a setting in which you will invite this contact to happen. This can be a place. It can be Friday night at 6 o'clock after you come from work, if you're able to go to work now and this what's going on in the world with COVID. At 6 o'clock, let's say, you set aside that time, 20 minutes, 10 minutes, half an hour, and you write them a letter, tell them what's going on in your life, you listen, you wait. Maybe you light a candle to honor it, or you could go for a walk. But have it as a dedicated time to open to this possibility. And then see what happens. If you're walking, you can watch for signs from the natural world. See if a bird does something surprising. And another vital thing, if you have the smallest thing happen, you think, did that bird really do something surprising? Say thank you. Say the person's name. Say thank you, Randy. Ah, are you visiting me through this bird? Thank you so much. We need to acknowledge in the same way that we would acknowledge and express gratitude to a living person who comes to visit. You'd say, thanks for stopping by. You know, well, it's the same thing. And this is a way to help ourselves to open to having an experience.
It's interesting you say watch for a bird to do a strange thing. You know, filming the series The Holzer Files, we were investigating ocean-born Mary's house, and here is this girl who was raised with the stigma of this very strange legend of her life and her family's life being spared by this pirate who would dress all in crimson with this large red plume on his hat. And here we are at this house, and the woman said that something happened just before we got there. Never happened before. This large red cardinal kept slamming into her window like it was trying to get in. And she said she'd never seen it, and it wouldn't stop. It just kept throwing itself into her window. Mm-hmm. And then we uncover all the story regarding this weird pirate story and the fact that when he would try to take things over, he would dress all in red with this hat with the large feathery plume. And the minute we're going to be there, a cardinal of all birds starts throwing itself into the window, trying to enter the home and enter the story again. It's really kind of cool. Coincidence or not, it was a very unique and interesting kind of moment. We have to take a break. We'll come back. We've got more. The book is called The After Death Chronicles. There's a link for it. Go order it right now. We'll be back. Stay tuned. You're listening to the best in paranormal talk radio.
You know what? We all need a break now and then, but why not keep your brain active while you relax? You know, when you need some me time, Best Fiends is a fun escape from the everyday. And believe me, now more than ever, especially this week, you need some me time and you need an escape. And Best Fiends is the best way to do it. I'll tell you what, I've needed me time this week more than anything. This week has been the roughest week. And I've just grabbed my device. In fact, I got my little iPhone 10 here. I just grabbed best. I have it on my iPhone 10. I have it on my iPad. So either way, although I'll tell you, I'm wearing bifocals these days, so my iPad tends to get used more than my iPhone. But I just grabbed Best Fiends. I jump right into the game because I'll tell you what, Best Fiends is like that. And I pick up right where I left off and I get going. I've got my favorite characters in the game. I got three characters I play with. They each have their own individual jobs that they do to get rid of these darn slugs. That's right, I said it, slugs. I hate me some slugs. And then I also am developing a sharper wit because of the puzzle-solving skills that I have evolved by playing Best Fiends. I know it doesn't sound like I'm speaking English right now, but I am. I love me some Best Fiends. I can't get enough of some Best Fiends. I become pleasantly obsessed with Best Fiends. I'm becoming a little bit smarter, a little bit faster. The old hand-eye coordination's getting better because of Best Fiends. I got to thank you, Best Fiends, because not only have you made me a sharper Timmy, but you've also made it convenient to play Best Fiends whenever I have time, which I don't have a lot of time in my schedule to play a game. That was always my problem with playing games in the first place. A lot of my friends are like, hey, Tim, you got to play this new game. You got to try this new game. And I'd be like, hey, buddy, I don't have hours and hours and hours to dedicate to this game. The nice thing about Best Fiends is you can pick it up and put it down whenever you need to. You can go through a level, you can put it down. You can go through a couple of levels, you can put it down. Or if you got a little bit of time, you can spend a little bit of time with Best Fiends. You can pick it up and put it down. It's very, very simple. Best Fiends also is challenging. It's one of those games that it's never the same thing twice. It's always challenging you. It's always throwing new levels and new experiences at you. And the game itself seems like it's always changing with new themes monthly. So you're never getting the same thing twice. You could keep playing Best Fiends for months, for years if you'd like, and you'll never see the same thing twice. That's why I love Best Fiends. So you may say to yourself, hey, Tim, how do I get a hold of Best Fiends? Well, it's real easy. You either go to the Apple App Store or Google Play and get yourself a free download. That's right, free download. There's been over 100 million downloads and tons of five-star reviews for Best Fiends. It's a spectacular game, and I'll tell you something, it's hours of fun right at your fingertips. And again, you can play offline. You don't need to be hooked up to Wi-Fi, and you don't need to have a data signal in order to play Best Fiends. You can play offline, and if you'd like, you can connect up to Wi-Fi or your data stream later to enjoy Best Fiends. So do yourself a favor. You can play on your breaks. You can play while your partner watches TV. You can play in random and weird places or play at random times. You can dedicate a lot of time to the game. You can take a little bit of time and play the game, but you can collect tons of characters, you can do monthly theme challenges, and you can get the best of Best Fiends and have a great time with this great game. Download Best Fiends free on the Apple App Store or Google Play. With over 100 million downloads and with all these five-star reviews, you can find out what all these people are talking about. Best Fiends is a must-play. Go to the Apple App Store or Google Play right now and download Best Fiends for free. That's friends without the R, Best Fiends. Download it today.
Podcast One presents. This is a collect call from Sing Sing.
My name is John J. Lennon. I'm locked up for selling drugs and committing murder. I'm also a contributor for Esquire magazine and the Marshall Project. So I'm a writer and I'm a prisoner. Imagine trying to stay focused and talk about issues of substance with geeks slamming, prisoners screaming, and PAs blaring in the background.
Get new episodes every Wednesday on Spotify, Podcast One, and Apple Podcasts.
Welcome back to the program. Thanks for tuning in. This is the best of paranormal talk radio. This is Darkness Radio. I'm Dave Schrader. That's Tim Dennis. And joining us, Annie Mattingly, True Stories of Comfort, Guidance, and Wisdom from Beyond the Veil. All right, where do you want to take us next in these unusual and beautiful encounters?
Well, I want to go back a little bit. Because
please.
You mentioned the word coincidence, you know, with the cardinal and the red-plumed pirate and so on. And that, I think, is one of the biggest blocks we use. It's our mind going, oh, it has to be a coincidence. It's just chance. And I think it's not a useful word if we're looking for experiences like this. It doesn't serve us because it tends to make us disbelieve whatever we see, whatever we experience.
That's a great point. I just know there's you do have a lot of the skeptics out there, a lot of the people that stand back, and not even skeptical in a bad way. They want to have experiences as well, but you know it's like almost like they're afraid to allow themselves to have those moments.
Well, our culture kind of trains us that way. It tells us we're crazy, we're troubled. There are experts who talk about this. I mean, I think one of the worst stories I ever heard was of a pediatrician who would tell parents if their child died that if they had an experience that they might think that he or she was talking to them or visiting them in some way, and if they had this problem to let them know, and he would give them something to make that go away. So if these are what our experts are saying,
right.
It's easy to think we shouldn't behave in this way, but it's something a little nuts.
Well, and you understand, I mean, from some aspects, you know, the medical sciences, the, you know, psychology, they necessarily can't put this in the right box. So they can't define it, and it's hard for them. And then, you know, there are people, and I'm sure you know this as well, there are people who become so obsessed with the afterlife that they forget to live their life. They're so focused on communicating with the dead that their life starts suffering. And, you know, I mean, important messages like this, I love books like yours, and I love people like you coming forward to share this. But the thing I always take away from this is not how close we really are in life and death, but how much more close we should be in life. And that if you make time now to say the things that you want to say and never leave those people wondering and never leave a compliment or a kind word unsaid, you'll never feel that emptiness of, you know, that's been the biggest bridge for my mom and I, and why I think I handle her loss so much better is we never left things out. I would have told her how much she meant to me. She knew every day how much she meant to me. And I think that's an important lesson. I'm not over the grieving. It still is part of me, but I think that that's a bigger part of me is that I'm so glad that I made the best of the time that I had with the people I love. And I try to tell them every day how much I love them and what they mean to me in different ways. Do you think that that's an important element to this as well? Will that not necessarily stop grieving, but do you think it gives an element of peace to the grieving?
It does. It does. If we, because it, then we don't have as many regrets. I mean, we have the loss, the grief. The grief is real. None of this makes the grief go away, as you were just saying. But to know that we have loved and expressed our love and our caring as much as we knew how takes away that, oh my God, what if I should have, I should have, I should have, what if, what if, what if? And I know that it is certainly a major lesson that came, a gift, I would call it a gift, that came from my daughter's death, because at first, I think there was a little obsession in it. My husband would go off to do an errand and come back 10 minutes later, and I'd start thinking, oh, should I call the cops? Should I call 911? You know, what's happened? Well, I recovered from that, but I learned that if he was going for the errand or I was going for the errand, there was nothing wrong with crossing back across the kitchen and going, honey, I love you, or just touching his face. Just expressing how important he or some others are in my life instead of waiting to do it tomorrow or some special occasion or something, because it taught me that from I only have this moment with this person. I may have others, but the only guaranteed one is this one that I'm in.
Right.
And that is a real gift. That is a real gift. I know that I have become more expressive of my love because of that. And
beautiful.
That's wonderful. I like having that in my life, and I think the people around me like that. And I get the sense that people are aware of my caring in a way that they might not have been before.
Let's dig deep into some more of these profound encounters. I think it comforts people to hear these stories. So where do you want to go next?
Well, I think the most common kind of there are a lot of different kinds of experiences, you know, I'll kind of go through a little bit of those. We've got dreams and visions and the simply knowing that someone's there, olfactory experiences where a smell is connected to someone, auditory experiences like mine, and electrical and physical experiences, nature, synchronous things, and all kinds of things that I can't even imagine because I'm forever hearing new things. But the most common is dreams. And I think it's because that's the most people can accept that dreams are okay, you know, so they don't have to question it so much. They don't have to worry about whether they're crazy if they have a dream. And so I think I'll go start with some dreams and tell a little bit, first of all, when I got into working on my chapter on dreams, or I was focused on dreams all the time, I got really mired in darkness, and I couldn't figure out what was going on, why I was feeling so different while I was working on this. And then I realized that I seemed to be processing or working with a lot of very difficult deaths, drownings and suicides and very sudden deaths where it was completely unexpected. And so then I went through and charted all of these dream experiences and found out that many, many more people had dreams following difficult deaths than more peaceful deaths, let's say, where, you know, it's an older person and they've been sick for a while and they slowly go and if somebody's sitting with them. Those did not seem to trigger the dream so much, but the difficult deaths did. And I think that's, because they are so easily accepted, the comfort is available in these situations where it's really needed because the deaths were so difficult. So what kind of story should I tell from that?
You make great points with that, right? I mean, that kind of almost fits into the realm, like I was talking about, you know, I felt crippled because I didn't get to say goodbye to my grandfather. I didn't get that chance. And when he came to me in a dream visitation, it was because I was traumatizing myself so much about it. But because I was there with my mom at the end of her journey, and we were so loving and vocal to one another about all of it, she has not visited me that way. So, you know, it's interesting when it does seem to be more of that kind of, I don't want to say unrequited, but when it seems to be that unfulfilled, and that's a bad word too, and it's never like death is fulfilling, but, you know, that there's still something left out there. That's when we seem to have these. And then, you know, I've been left with it as well. And I wonder how many of the people or even yourself are left wondering, but are these experiences truly with the spirit of our loved one, or is it with an angelic being taking that form to help us and comfort us through that moment?
Well, all I know is it feels like it is. It is really the person. But, you know, when you get into the fine points of whether it's an angelic being in disguise, I don't know. I really don't know. And I'm not sure that it matters, because if it is an angelic being taking that form. I think it is with permission of the person who has died. I doubt that anyone would take that over. Any, you know, positive being would take over that role without permission. And so it's still contact in a certain way. And it certainly feels, I don't know. You know, when I think, you know, when you're in a body, and if we are paying attention, we will notice that there are times when we are aware that someone we know is behind us, or we know who's going to call when the phone rings, or we have a connection with people that is beyond the physical, that we can recognize. We know who they are on some other level, with some other outside of our five senses. We are aware of the presence of people we know well. And so I think we recognize them, even when they're not in the physical.
That's a great point, because so many people will ask me, and they have this fear, Dave, what if it's not them? What if it's something trying to trick me, and it's taking on that guise? There's that inherent fear in people. Mm. How do you address them regarding that?
Well, I've never had anybody ask me that, because the people that I've talked to have been so sure that it was. And why would someone, what would be the purpose of such trickery?
There's a lot of conjecture out there. I don't even want to put it out there, because I don't want to put that into the people's heads and help to perpetrate fear. When I think here's, you said, I think the most poignant part of the statement a few moments ago is the fact that you know when you're in the presence. And
right.
You know, here's the difference. Like, if your daughter were to appear to you and say, Mom, I miss you, you should take your life and come with me, then maybe you can question where this is coming from. But if this is a comfort and a love and something wonderful, that's it. If you're getting something, as you said earlier, if you're getting something that's uneasy and uncomfortable, you say, you're in the realm of the dead, you need to leave now, you need mm-hmm. to go. And you don't mm-hmm. give them that permission to have that effect on
mm-hmm.
you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the delineating line for me. So I just, you know, I wanted to get your perspective, which you'd already kind of said. I just repositioning it for you. But I think that is, you know, if you're afraid that you're not truly having that experience, what was the takeaway? Was it love? Was it happiness and comfort? Then there's no doubt that what you just experienced was your loved one.
Well, you've said that very well. I think that's wise. Ask. What's the takeaway? Because if it's good, you got it, you know. And there's you said my point of view, but there's another point of view here, because
please.
as you were made that statement about, oh, Mom, I miss you, or why don't you take your own life so we can be together? I got the rush up the left side of my body. This is my daughter going, yeah, no, that's not me. We don't do
right.
that.
Right.
You know? I know she's always around, but I don't always feel her. But I did then, and it was pretty strong. So.
Right. Like, I mean, one of my favorite, most chilling episodes of Twilight Zone was with little Billy Mumy from Lost in Space, when his favorite grandma passes away. And then spends the entire episode talking to him on that toy phone, trying to convince himself to die, go out into traffic, go and all of that. That is one of the most terrifying moments. But I can guarantee you the love and the bond between that mother or grandmother and grandson would never lead to something like that. So if that's something you're
encountering,
then seek help, friends. Then seek help. But otherwise, enjoy and embrace those beautiful moments and the messages that come through.
Mm-hmm. And trust that these people, the last thing they want is for us to die. I'll tell a story here. This is one that's not in the book. I've told it a few times on this kind of situation, but I love this story. A woman's daughter has died, and she is in, I don't actually remember the time frame, the distance, but she's driving down the road, and she hears her daughter's voice say very distinctly, Mom, bring the car to a stop. And you'll note that she doesn't say, stop the car. You know, that would be a sudden action. Mom, bring the car to a stop. So up ahead, a little bit ahead, is a green traffic light. She slows and stops at the green traffic light. who stops at a green traffic light? But she does, and a big truck runs the red light right in front of her, where she would probably have been had she not listened to her daughter's voice. And that's the kind of thing that our deceased beloveds do for us. They don't ask us to come join them. They'd be the opposite. They honor life. And it doesn't seem to matter if they have taken their own life. That was not a suicide situation. But if they have, that does not mean that they think that's a good idea. That's what they did, but they're not encouraging it in anyone else.
Agreed.
So, yeah.
All right. Let's hear another one or two of your favorite stories, please.
All right. Favorite stories. Let me see. What's coming to mind? Nothing is coming to mind. Oh, well, this is just a silly little one, but a woman has inherited a rocking chair from her mother. And this chair becomes her favorite chair. It's the one she reads in. It's the one she watches TV in. It's the one she sits in. It's in the living room. And I think it's holiday. I think it's Christmas. And her housemate has a friend come to visit who she doesn't know. And that the woman whose mother has died that did not know. And the woman sits down in this rocking chair, and suddenly she jumps up and she says, "Is this a vibrating chair?" And they go, "No, it's not a vibrating chair. It's my mother's chair." And she sits back down again, and she jumps up again, and she moves to another chair. It only vibrates when someone else sits in it. It doesn't vibrate when the daughter sits in it. And I think it's the mother simply saying, "This is your chair, honey. This is where I can comfort you." And if you think about what a chair, this chair had arms and it was cushioned, so it was like an embrace when she sat in that chair, when the daughter sat in the chair, and it wasn't meant for anyone else. That's who the embrace was for. And this is an example of these very weird things that the dead seem capable of doing. Another woman had went out, came back, and as she's unlocking the door, she hears the blender going in the kitchen. There's nobody in the house, right? The blender is going in the kitchen. And her friend said to her later, "Well, couldn't you have left the blender on when you left the house? Who leaves an empty blender on as you walk out of the house, you know?" And they did seem very good at manipulating electrical equipment of some kind. The blender went off, so the woman says, "Ah, it's my husband." She knows that it's her husband just saying hi, you know? And a blender left like that on an... I actually don't know this, but I've assumed that if you leave a blender on for an hour while you're gone with nothing in it, that it might burn itself out. And there was it wasn't overheated or anything. So she knew it had only been on for a moment or so. I've heard of TV channels that change themselves either in the middle of a show or you leave it on one channel, you turn it off, you come back, it's on another channel. Other things like that. Alarm one was an alarm system where the daughter had inherited her mother's home, and they were selling the home. Now there's an alarm system in the daughter's home, and it just started malfunctioning after her mother's death. And they would call the alarm company, and the alarm company would come and find nothing wrong with it. And they called the alarm company enough and said, "Well, a big truck must have gone by." "Oh, really? A big truck throws off your alarm system?" And then when they went to, they had to go some distance to finalize the sale on the mother's house, it malfunctioned while they were gone. And the daughter really felt every time that this was the mother communicating in this odd way, kind of a pain in the neck way. But if you think about what an alarm system does, an alarm system is to protect us. Well, mothers protect us. An alarm system says, uh-oh, something's wrong when something is wrong. And it seems like a kind of a maternal role in a way. So it seemed not inappropriate. Just like the chair was gave an embrace, the alarm system gave a acted in a somewhat maternal way, more like we act when our kids are real, real little, not when they're adults, but or at least we hope not anyway.
You know what I love is one of my favorite stories like this is the fact that one of the biggest skeptics out there, Michael Shermer from Skeptic Magazine, right? Dr. Mm-hmm. Michael Shermer, when he got married a few years ago, and he talks about this story openly, he is not a believer in the paranormal, but an old radio of, I believe it was his, Tim, if you remember this better than I, correct me, but I believe it was his wife's old radio, which belonged to her father, and he had passed away before they had gotten married, of course. This radio that did not work suddenly turned on, played an entire song, and then turned off. And has never done that before or since. But it was on their wedding day, and it was like her father's favorite song that that radio switched on long to play. Was that?
Well, that,
did I get
that's
that
what
right
I was
then?
Gonna.
I'm. It's been a while since I've heard the story, so I'm not quite sure.
I'm pretty sure that's the generality of how it went.
Well, what I was about to ask you, but you answered it before I asked, was what was the song? Did it have significance? Because that's the kind of thing I've heard.
I don't recall, but I believe it was something that meant something to her or meant something to her dad.
Right.
But that it was his radio, and it turned on and played and then turned off and never did it again is pretty remarkable. So those are the kind of golden moments. And he said, you know, he says, I can't tell you it was a ghost. I have no explanation for it, but I won't say a ghost did this. But, you know, again, it's up to your interpretation of it. You know, I mean, I'm always cautious with things when I say, you know, yeah, today you were thinking of dad and then you saw his pack of cigarettes and it's, you know, nobody ever smokes Pall Malls, but there they are. But you're thinking of dad today. So maybe are you triggered mnemonically to notice something like that? You know, I do say there are points you do have to be kind of cautious and question some things. But, you know, there are other instances like that that are just they seem so overwhelmingly, glaringly obvious that something exciting is really taking place.
Yes. And I think that's pretty neat that this guy who's a skeptic should at least accept the possibility that there might have been something there.
It is very cool stuff. We've got time for about one more story. What's one more tale you can tell us of after death communication?
Well, let's see. Well, here's sometimes we get messages in dreams for other people. And that can be a pretty interesting experience. And I had sometimes people say, well, why don't they just go directly to the person? But often it's because the person won't listen, won't accept it. And when the message comes from someone else, they're more open to hearing it. So I think there are a couple of message stories I can think of. One, a woman barely knew this man. I think she had catered something for him or something. I think she did catering. So it was not a strong connection at all. But he died. He had a daughter who worked in a business in the town and a bank, I think it was. And the woman I was interviewing had a dream in which he said that he wanted her to tell his daughter that he was all right, just that he was all right. And she thought, oh, this is ridiculous. I barely know this woman. You know, maybe I met her once. You know, I know who she is. I know where she works. I don't really know her. So she put it off. She put it off, but it just kept niggling at her and niggling at her. And finally she went to this place of business. She had to wait in a line. It took her a while to get up to see the woman. And all the while she's thinking, ready to bolt, you know. But She does go, sticks it out and goes to the woman's desk and sits down and says, I know this is very strange. I know that we barely know each other. I barely knew your father. She's really a little feeling a little embarrassed, but she says, I had a dream and your father told me to tell you that he's all right. And the woman just bursts into tears. She says, I've been waiting to hear this. I've been waiting to hear this. This is what I needed. This is what I needed. And she's thrilled that this message has been delivered. So now the first woman, the woman I interviewed, has a much deeper connection with her dreams. She trusts her dreams a little more because of this. And the daughter has been greatly relieved. And there is another dream with a message in it that I can think of off the top of my head.
Please.
That is where the child had the dream. And she's an adult now. She's a former neighbor of mine. But she dreamed after her beloved grandmother died that her grandmother had a message for her son, for my interviewee's father and the grandmother's son, saying that it was all right. Now, what was meant by that, she found out later. Jenny delivered the message to her father, who immediately began to cry because he knew what the message meant. The grandmother had had a stroke, and prior to that, the father had committed to her that he would not put her in a nursing home, but after she had the stroke, they were unable to care for her at home, and he did put her in the nursing home. And what the grandmother was saying was, it's all right. It was all right that you put me in this nursing home. I know that you had to do that, regardless of the commitment that you had made. And so that was tremendously relieving. And then just another little detail about it was that when this 12-year-old child is describing to her father the details of the dream, she describes the man who's sitting beside her grandmother. And the father says, oh, that's your grandfather. And he had died when she was very young, and she didn't even remember him. So,
that's great. Boy, that's yeah. Some real corroboration that you're able to pull out there.
Yeah, yeah.
Very cool. The After Death, let me try that again in English. The After Death Chronicles, True Stories of Comfort, Guidance, and Wisdom from Beyond the Veil. Have you had encounters, folks? If you have, share them with us. You can always call our Voices from Beyond voicemail, 651-300-4977. We may play it on an upcoming Saturday Parish Share. Again, that's 651-300-4977. Have you had after-death communication with a loved one, friend, relative, coworker? We'd love to hear from you. Give us a call, 651-300-4977. Leave your story. If it's longer than 3 minutes, just hang up, call back, continue telling your story. Tim will put them all together, and we'll play the entire thing on an upcoming story. You can share a story about afterlife communication or any paranormal encounter with us. We're always willing to hear your stories and share them with our audience all around the world. Annie, please continue to stay safe. Thank you for putting books like this out there and sharing your stories and the stories of those that you've collected with us.
Well, you're most welcome. I've enjoyed this a whole lot.
So have we. Thank you.
You do very good work. Thank you.
We appreciate that. Remember to check out True Crime Tuesday this week. Tim, we're going Wild West.
All right.
We're going rogue. We're going to check out the real story behind the shooting at OK Corral, the vengeance ride from hell, and stories and things you may not really know about the Earp brothers, Doc Holliday, and more of the Tombstone crimes. That takes place this Tuesday, plus all new Dumb Crimes, Stupid Criminals. And boy, do we have some dumb crimes and stupid criminals. Then we'll be back again next weekend with more of the best in paranormal talk radio. And Don Wildman joins us next Sunday as we lead into the new show. I'll be out on the road filming again for Holzer Files. So keep me in your thoughts and prayers for safety for me and the entire production team as we continue to do that. We'll be back again. Thank you all for tuning in and being a part of our world here on Darkness Radio.